After 38 years of public service, Bill Kite retired in 2016 as the public affairs officer for the 2.3 million acre White River National Forest. Thank you for your service. From 1979 until 2013, he had a dual career in firefighting, working his way through the incident command system to elite Type 1 and Type 2 teams managing such disasters as the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the Yellowstone fires, and the 2013 Colorado floods. He is a poet, storyteller, and writer, authoring a monthly newspaper column, It's About Time, hosting KDNK's public affairs program, For Land's Sake. Let's put our hands together for Bill Kite.
My fascination with the mystery of fire started quite unexpectedly when I was a preteen raking leaves and weeds in our New Mexico country home, and the fire got away. When the fire trucks came, they allowed me to help put it out with burlap bags soaked in water. And in my preteen male mind, I thought, I really like putting out fire. Fast forward to 1979. I sign on the dotted line for a dual career in archaeology and fighting fire. To be a firefighter, you have to understand, to be on the line and put out a fire, you have to, in 35 minutes, take a 45-pound pack and go 3 miles. And if you don't do that, you don't make it, okay? So I then take all the tests, do everything I'm supposed to do, and become a firefighter. Now, the interesting thing about fighting fires is you really have to know what you're doing. And I, at the time when I started, I didn't understand fire like I do now. And as a result, it took a long time to get to the point to understand those mysteries of fire from the lessons of Vulcan in the field on fires and from Grandfather Fire. The first fire I want to talk about is the Flint Hills Fire that happened in July 21st, 1985. It was the largest fire in 50 years. It consumed 22,000 acres by the time it was done. I was a mere grunt on the fire line in a 20-person crew when the incident commander called me into the incident command post and said, Bill, I'm putting our safety officer in charge of the camp and the ICP, and I want you to go out and be in the field. I know your training's not done, but this will be on-the-job training. Right. I'll go out with Mike, my operations chief, and we go out and we head to the fire. And in the time we're driving to the fire, three things come together in alignment that creates the perfect fire: low humidity, high temperatures, and wind. And that sucker took off to the races. We had the maps with us. We stopped long enough to see, where are we going to stop this fire? Where are we going to take a stand? We hurried to get to the fire line, and on the way, we stopped at a cabin that an engine crew had been assigned to protect. We tried to convince the people there, we knew what we were doing, and to not, to just do their job. But one of the firefighters with the hose in their hand and the nozzle ready to go had tears streaming down their face. To understand a backfire, I'll put it this way. It's a pucker factor of 9.5 from 1 to 10. You take fusees about this long, this big around. On one end is a lighter, and on the other end is a hollow tube that you stick another fusee in. You stick another fusee in until you have three of them as a wand. And when you strike that sucker with your gloves on, you have 15 minutes at 4,300 degrees on the end of that fusee to put that sucker out. The fire has turned into a huge column at this point. We pick our point to anchor it, and we start lining that road with fire. And we line it, and we line it. We grab another fusee out of our pack, and we keep going until we get to the end of that area that we said we would hold the fire. My friend Mike pokes me on the shoulder and he goes, "Bill, look up." See, we'd been so busy looking down, we hadn't had time to look up. And I looked up and up and up. "Bill, that's a gobbler that's 36,000 to 40,000 feet high. We've done our job. Let's go." The next fire is in Oregon. Assignment as safety officer. I've gained a little bit of knowledge by now. And of all the apt names for this fire, it's called the Desolation Complex, a combination of a number of fires together that we were supposed to manage and try to put out. As safety officer, I was assigned to keep a crew safe out on the line. In order to do that, we decided to build a huge safety zone. One of the few first times that this had been done, cleared all the huge timber out, and Oregon timber is big, out of that area so people would be safe. I went up to my perch on a high lookout point, and it wasn't long before the fire started roaring and headed right for the crew. And I didn't wait for the crew boss to tell them to get in their fire safety zone. I grabbed the radio and I said, "This is priority one. We have a priority one. This is a safety officer. I want all other communication on this network to stop." I ordered them into their safety zone and into their fire shelters. Now, you have to understand, a fire shelter is an aluminum thing that tells you this is the last resort. We call them shake and bake bags, by the way. They got in their fire shelters, and air ops flying over the fire calls and says, "Do you want me to send air attack to lead in a tanker and drop retardant on them?" I go, no. You could split those fire shelters open and kill everybody. It was so hot that it melted the canteens, the thick plastic canteens next to the fire shelters that the 20 souls were in. It seemed like an eternity, and finally, it was safe to get out of their shelter. I ordered them up to my place and evacuated them by helicopter. By this time, I'm realizing something's wrong with this picture. I see more and more fires with extreme fire behavior, burning through the night, which is unusual. And people started using words that now seem to be familiar to all of you, such as catastrophic, extreme fire behavior, conflagration. And the experts tell me that it was the middle of 1980s when these fires were happening that climate change started affecting fires. The last fire I want to tell you about was the Yellowstone fires, 1988. We were the last team assigned to the Yellowstone fires. It was October. As a matter of fact, it was October 11th. On a fire, you have a shift plan that tells you everything that needs to be done and every assignment. All the leaders gather for briefing at 6 o'clock in the morning. They know what to do. They go back to their crews and tell them exactly what their assignment is. Usually, the shift plan cover is designed by an artist on the fire. In this case, it was a Wyoming fire crew artist that drew the cover. On the front is a helicopter dropping water buckets on a snag that's on fire with a crew member running. I'd been trying to get the crews to think about snags and grizzlies. Snags are trees that are dead that fall over and can kill you. So I had them sing along. Now, if you can imagine trying to have 16-hour hard-working firefighters sing this song, then you'll get the picture. Snags and grizzlies, snags and grizzlies. You got to watch out for those snags and grizzlies. That same Wyoming crew was putting out a hot spot. The helicopter flew over just like the shift plan cover. And the rotor wash from that helicopter knocked over a 72-foot snag and killed Ed Hutton, 26 years old. The fires were starting to kill people. Since that time, there are 5 times more fires. They burn 6 times more area and last 5 times longer. And sometimes they threaten whole communities. Thank you.